What is my next challenge in daring to be human?
How do I connect with life?
How can I let go of my need for fixed answers in favor of aliveness?
How do I live free from the experiences that shaped me?
How can we be the change the world needs right now?
Join us weekly for Stony Conversations about life.
It is our mission to allow life itself to reveal to us the answers. Welcome to Chasing Thoughts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Chasing Thoughts. I'm doing the intro, so I'm all awkward because I'm not used to it again. But I'm excited about today, what we were talking about on Monday. We got into talking about like just the darkness that we all kind of carry inside and how it affects us, how it shows itself. So yeah, I'm really nervous. So I'm like fidgeting a lot. So I apologize. But yeah, I wanted to become as absolutely vulnerable as I possibly can and just let there not be any secrets. You know what I mean? Because the secrets are the shame that builds inside.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I was feeling nervous about this and my brain said, just tell Keith, hey, if this gets too raw, we don't have to air it, right? It's like my brain wanted an out to go into this, even though I don't plan on taking it. That's how frightened it was. And that was curious to me.
Yeah. I made a decision probably a couple weeks ago, you know, thinking about setting my intentions for this upcoming trip that I'm doing, and then even things like this. The darkness, like when we talk about that darkness that we feel, the fear, the things that we hide away, you know, that we lock away in the closet in our minds. There's such a negativity that's built around it, you know, and I get it. I mean, we're built from our experiences, and scary shit, it goes on in the darkness, you know, from entertainment, like with movies and stuff like that, you know, specific, like music like that, you know, the really heavy metal and everything. And then a lot of evil happens in the darkness as well. You know, so it's something that we don't want to face. But I think that there is a distinct difference between the outer and the inner darkness. And the inner darkness can be needs to be just as much a part of us as the light, as the good side of our emotional states.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was thinking about this conversation, I realized even I had a little bit of a misconception when people talk about facing your darkness or everybody has a dark side. I think that a lot of that gets lumped in just this one dimensional, like, well, I don't think about murdering people, or I don't think about how, you know, all this crazy stuff. But really, like everything in life, it's this spectrum, right? The darkness is also that voice that tells me everybody's going to hate me when I walk into this room.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think for me, I avoided looking at this for a long time because I thought I didn't have a dark side or it wasn't very big. And then when I really looked, I said, oh shit. Yeah, I do. And it controlled a lot of my life.
Yeah. And it's, I don't think it's something that we should try to lessen in our life. I think it's something that we should try to understand what it actually is.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, like my mind just goes to like science, like, you know, space and everything. Yeah. And I was reading a thing talking about the universe. I think I might've said it last episode too, but, when at the moment of the Big Bang, there was matter and antimatter created. And if I don't get it this perfect, forgive me. It's just something I've read. And if it was 50-50, it would cancel itself out and the universe wouldn't exist anymore. So there was a little bit more matter than there was antimatter, you know, but there needed to be both in order for the universe to exist. So internally, there needs to be both. You know, we just need to redefine what it is and also not be afraid to shine light into that darkness.
And I would say have control of it instead of it having control of me.
Right.
Like be conscious enough and in relationship with it enough that I'm conscious Mindy's the one in control instead of this darkness. And darkness is such a weird thing for it. You know, I was gardening this week and I had this thought, okay, this podcast is coming in. Check in right now. How do you feel in your body? What's happening? What's your level of fear? Because as I told you on Monday, and listeners, you didn't hear this, I was telling Keith about how I've recognized my anxiety is just sort of a piece of this darkness or this fear that I just carry around with myself all the time. And that's what happened in the garden is I was like, when I checked in, I was actually tense. And then I just went like, okay, like be present and like let it go, let it go. And then it wasn't there. And I kept gardening. But like you said, what is that? Where did it come from? How is it weaving into my life?
Yeah. It made me think when you were talking about that. This trip in December for me has really kind of, first it spun me up, you know, thinking about ways to get out of it, you know, st still kind of do, you know, a little bit, you know. But it made me think of, you know, why, like you were saying, like, why is that? Where is that coming from? And I realized it was I'm searching for an experience. And it's an experience that needs to prove that what I believe is real. Because I don't actually believe what I believe. It's more of a desire. I want to believe this. And I think it's very easy to like follow that path and go into this, like, you know, fake it till you make it type mentality of where you just fake your life, you know, through all the steps, you know. And that's when you become a character. You know, you become the spiritual character. And then there's another side of it where, you know, wanting that experience. I don't want to need to have that experience to prove it. I want to be able to, because I mean, that's what faith is. Faith is, like in the Bible talks about, it's the evidence of things unseen. So what it all equates to is I have zero faith in it, so I need this tangible physical evidence to prove to me that what I believe is real, where there's always this seed of doubt, and that seed of doubt makes me question everything. And when it comes down to it, is if it's not, then what the fuck has all of this been about? And that scares the shit out of me.
Yeah, it's interesting because what I felt this week was different, but it has similar components to yours. This fake it till you make it. What I realized is I'm not actually in my life, right? Like fully in my life. Instead, I'm separated from it. And that's what happened in the garden. I wasn't there going, what does this smell like? What does this feel like? Just being present. And for me, I think it had something to do with like not deserving my life, or this belief that if I just go around and my soul feels at peace all the time, like it's all okay, it's good, that that's somehow irresponsible and flaky, and that would make me a shitty, unaffected person. Like I want to carry this tenseness with me all the time because I feel like it's protecting me. And it keeps me from actually entering my life and really being present with my life.
Yes. Yeah. I heard a quote. I forget who it was from. It might have been like Terrence McKenna or something, but he said, excuse me, I smoked a very potent strain. But yeah, he said, you know, we always talk about life in terms of the journey we're on, walking the path. And he said that I'll paraphrase, that just fucks us up completely. He said, what we need to realize is life is a garden and we're supposed to just walk around experiencing, seeing, you know, we don't live in our senses. You know, you think about this past summer, I was taking a walk and this guy with two dogs, one was like one of those sheep herder dogs, border collies, and the other was just like this playful puppy. I don't even know what it was, but it looked like what it wasn't a one of those racing dogs, but it looked like it was just freaking fast and it looked so fun. So as I was approaching the guy, I'm thinking about the fun dog, not realizing the border collie 2000 years of breeding is going to be like, bitch, get away. So he jumped up and like hit me hard, to the point like bruised, like I had a bruise on my side from it. And I thought he was just jumping up excited. And then when I stepped forward again, he nipped me in my arm. Didn't break the skin, nothing, but I didn't listen to what the dog was saying. You know, he wasn't communicating the way that we experience communicate, or we've learned to experience communication, you know, but the way we do it nowadays, we limit our communication by 50%. I mean, we're animals and all animals communicate non-verbally.
Yeah. You know,
I follow this woman that swims with tiger sharks. And she, and like not in a cage, nothing. And she just lets them swim up to her and then puts her hand on their nose and redirects this freaking 20-foot shark. And they're like puppies to her, but it's all because she can understand how they're communicating. So we don't, when we get like that, when we're either in our imagination or in our past, you know, we're not living through our senses. And so we're losing all this communication except for this bullshit that is just dumping toxins into our minds, into our bodies that are going to make us then feel worse. You know, like the the meditation I sent you for the pineal gland activation, the first thing that she does is has you feel your five senses. She walks you through what you see with your eyes closed, colors, what you hear, what you smell, what you're feeling. Then she brings you in. Now focus on, and it's cool too, because she describes where it is and she describes it anatomically, but she also describes it in the yoga terms, like what the third eye, the ashwagandha, whatever spot. And that's what it is. It's about being in our senses. That's to me like what being present is living through our senses and not through all this toxic bullshit.
Yeah. What percentage would you say that you live in your head versus in your senses or in your body?
Like 99% in my head, 1% in my body.
Yeah. I would say I'm right there with you. And I don't know if it's just a new practice, right, going forward, like how to change this. For me, I really was thinking about how so much of the time I don't even have the awareness that I'm in my mind, right? I'm out in the world doing. And so I never have the thought that says, what colors do you see? What do you feel in your body? How do you feel, right? To like get back present in the moment. And so first, I was curious about how do you cultivate just more awareness so that you can start to, or so that I can start to redirect my thoughts or allow more peace to come into me or feel my body senses in the moment.
Yeah. And I think that's that is the first step to all of this, you know, and I hate like the things of like, do these 10 things and, you know, like all of a sudden you're going to have millions of dollars and you're going to love yourself, right? And, you know, all this stuff. But I think there's like fundamental systems on how the mind works, you know, and that's, and not the mind, but not the brain, but the mind, like, yeah. The brain, to me, like that's area of the psychiatrist, the therapist, like the neuroscientists, you know, but our mind is this universe, but it operates off these principles, you know? And so understanding that aspect of it, where awareness is the first step to actually doing that, to actually beginning to change.
Yes.
And the thing that sucks about it is it comes very, very slow at first. Because the only really way to do it, like when you're unaware, you can't be aware, you know, because by definition, you're unaware, you're in that state.
Right.
But then, so when I go to my cousin's, like a 2-hour drive, and I'm listening to, what is that, Gaia, G-A-I-A,
yeah.
Has like all those spirituality type documentaries, and they have a podcast. And this lady was talking about lucid dreaming. And I've heard the term before. I had no idea what it was, but she was talking about like the way to start practicing it is if you have patterns in your dreams, then before you go to bed, just like set this intention, like put it in your head that when you recognize that pattern, you'll now know that you're dreaming, and then you can then become conscious in your dreams.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't remember my dreams. So I've been trying it, but like nothing is working, you know, and I'm just like, oh, this is gonna be so cool if it happens, you know. But it's when that awareness comes, like there'll come a point when you set this intention, like, okay, I want to change this. There'll come a point where when you'll realize, just like you did in your garden, like it's this little spark of, oh, hey, wait a second. It's almost like your conscious mind, your true self, you know, kicking you in the ass, you know, saying like, all right, here's your shot, you know. And then spending as much time in that awareness as possible, because there's never been one person that, you know, gained that awareness and then was just like, oh, you know, enlightened. You know what I mean? Like everybody says the same thing. I fall out of it, then I go back in, then I fall out of it, you know? So it's that, I mean, you think about it, it's like they say it, everything's about vibrations. It's that the wave, that vibration. You're gonna hit it, you're gonna fall out of it. You're gonna hit it, you're gonna fall out of it. You know, and what you want to do is make those vibrations, you know, closer together, those peaks closer together.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that just giving it permission, like having a conversation inside yourself, or maybe you ask the universe or ask God, whatever your language for it is, but some sort of intention, like you said, that is very clear that says, I'm ready to learn this. I'm ready to see this. I want to recognize this. That always surprises me how much that actually helps. Yeah. Like just stating it. I mean, I'm lucky because, you know, I have a lot of people around me. So I'm part of a couple of women's circles. I'm around other spiritual people. And so we say these kinds of things to each other, right? I'm asking the universe for this right now. And I think that declaration is valuable.
Oh, yes.
And I think sometimes reminders So is it that post-it on your mirror in the morning? Is it your new screensaver? Is it your new password? What do you set up in your life that are little like ping, ping? Remember, you wanted to be aware, get into your senses. How can
Yeah.
you?
And we do that anyways. You know, like the declaration, I mean, we do it anyways. Normally it's just, you know, like so I got pool tonight, and if I miss a shot that I shouldn't miss, but like, why am I such a piece of shit? You know, so I'm declaring stuff anyways. You know, so like you had said before, like we're gonna lie to ourselves anyway. So why don't we just lie to ourselves where it like emboldens us? You know, like I am gonna be the greatest pool player in that place tonight. You know, I mean, and I mean, there's just numerous studies that shows what confidence does for you. You know, when you're confident, you're more likely to succeed, to make the shot, to do things in the way that they're supposed to be done, so that you know, have all that opportunity. So yeah, I mean, it's the same deal.
And I know people sometimes have a hard time with that idea, but think about sports psychology. You're thinking the positive thought, I'm going to hit the ball, I'm going to hit the ball, and you're visualizing doing it 1,000 times. And then you go up there and you do it. It's the same with life,
Yes.
right? That mental practicing of something is important if you want to make a change, if you're right, trying to tackle something.
And that's where I fell in love with the mind, because you know, when you talk about visualization, that one of the groups that I did at the VA a long time ago was on meditation, and the doctor that was running it was she was talking about visualization, and I had already kind of believed in it, not to the point that I do now, but everybody else there was like, this is the stupidest shit like I've ever heard, you know. But I mean, there is no limit to how many people like go out and interview experts, you know. So we have so much information of what the best people in their field do. And if you ask, like you said, anybody in sports, anybody that is like at the top of their thing, visualization is so important. You know, there's a documentary on the Blue Angels, and I haven't seen it yet, but in the trailer, they showed them getting ready to fly. Now, these are the best pilots in the world. They're flying upside down, 4 feet apart, going however fast they go, 1,200 miles an hour, whatever, you know, and before they go up, they get together and they visualize all the they close their eyes and they visualize all the movements they're going to be doing as if they're in the cockpit. You know, the power of that. And there's studies that show they did a study where they had three groups of people. One group would practice for an hour a day on the piano to play a song. Or like to do scales, something like that. The next group would do nothing, right? They wouldn't practice anything, right? And then the third group would not play the piano, but they would visualize as if they were, right? Not watching themselves play it as if they were watching themselves on a movie screen, but visualizing as if they're playing the piano. And what they found was, you know, of course, that did the group that didn't do anything, there was no changes in their brain because they had scanned the brains before and after to see if there was changes. The group that practiced, there was changes in the brain, right? So they definitely learned something. The group that visualized themselves doing it, there was very similar changes in their brain. So they learned how to play this scale without ever playing the scale. You know, and that's the power of the mind.
Yeah, I would like to use visualization more in my life. I think I do a fair bit right now. I mean, I call it daydreaming often because I'm laying around imagining my future, imagining my day, and it feels like when I was, in junior high school and I was Oh, I hope I see this boy today, or I hope I do this, right? Allowing myself to get into that like gooey, beautiful space and think about my day and my future and what I want to happen. I think there's so much power in that. And when I make myself do that, like when I actually sit down with headphones for 10 minutes in the morning, I feel better all day long.
Yeah, and see this is where I learned that I have a horrible relationship with that internal darkness.
How so?
I can't do that.
Why?
So when I can think about it in my head, but when I do, I think about myself, you know, I'm successful, and I pick, but I'm like, I'm picturing myself like in what I think a successful person would look like. So it's a suit, a tie. I'm not a suit and tie dude. Like, no. So I'm not picturing what I would be. I'm picturing a character like the sort of the typical version of what that person would look like. Even how the success, like picturing myself on stage, you know, with like people listening to my great wisdom, and I have no fucking clue what is going to come to any of this. But again, like that's not me. I don't, you know, one of the things I loved about anthropology is they said anthropologists are observers from the shadows, and I resonate with that so much. I don't want praise. I don't want attention. You know, that's the PTSD, like, I mean, like you don't want the spotlight on you. So I'm fine with that. And I get so much joy out of the joy and the breakthroughs that my clients have. You know, like it's not about what I've done. It's like, oh my God, look at what you're doing. You know, and that's what feeds me. And that's why I don't want any of the bullshit $10,000. Like, I want people happy. I want people powerful. And I know they're going to be going through all different types of struggles that I'll never understand. But there's still a way because that's how powerful our minds are. But there's two parts of our minds. And for me, I feel like up here plays the character. All of everything that I just spoke, I felt like that came from here. I was not, I was like, you know, in like in meditation when people kind of go black, I literally have no idea what I just said. I just know that it was very meaningful to me.
Right.
And I feel like that, like somebody put a board that cuts me right through here, where the spiritual belief system leaves like the knowledge center and tries to get through and then just hits a wall. You know, and our heart has like something like 39,000 brain cells. And I'm like, for me, this is just my own assumption, but like that's where I want to think from. I want to think from those brain cells in my heart.
Yes, me too.
That's where I want to, and I feel like there's this dark wall, like this ice that I
Yeah.
can't connect with it. No matter what I do. And I'm scared shitless that I'll never be able to. Even though
Yeah.
I know that's not true.
Yeah.
But because that's still there, I'm like, but what if it is? And just by allowing that question in, it can never be true.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I understand what you mean, and I feel like I have fleeting moments where, I'm present or living from my five senses and my heart brain cells, but they're just moments right now. And when I imagine living a life that was 90% of my time like that, my wall is like, not that it's not possible, but like it's irresponsible and and would make me a bad person for some reason. Like that is the feeling I get in my body, that carrying around this tension or thinking all the time is making me a good person or an effective person, even though I know that's not true. But like that's what my wall is saying, and I don't know where it came from or why that messaging. But there's a part of me that doesn't want to be present all the time, because there's it means something about me that I don't like, but I don't quite know what it is yet. Right? I haven't really, that's that darkness, right? Like, I want to peer into you and know, oh, that's where that comes from. That's why you're right. And I don't know that yet.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating,
Yes, it is.
you know, because it makes me feel like I am being a character. I'm not being myself, and in a way, I'm not, because there's that division. That's why the intention I set for this trip, when we do, so there's going to be two ayahuasca ceremonies. The first one, and I don't know if I'm like setting myself up for a fucking nightmare, but I want to face that block. I want to face that darkness, and I want to learn how to communicate with it, learn how to understand what it's trying to tell me, instead of, you know, like smacking it away, you know, by calling myself a bitch and, you know, being so harsh on myself. You know, understand what is the communication that anxiety is trying to get across to me. You
Yes.
know, and this is going to be some powerful medicine. So there's going to be, I'm like, I'm sure a lot of visuals, but as scary as anything that is going to be in there, I want to see it for the beauty that it is, because everything in me, including the darkness, is designed to keep me safe.
Right. And when you really, really know that to your core, this internal conflict won't exist anymore. Right?
Yeah, I think of the yin yang symbol. There's that beautiful curving wave line. And then in each sections, you know, in the dark side, there's the little circle of light of white. And then in the white side, there's a little circle of black. You know, so there can be some darkness in our light, you know, when there's not, that's when we're like the people pleasers, you know, not being able to be assertive, not being able to, you know, stand up and hold your ground and hold your boundaries, you know. So that darkness is such a beautiful thing. It allows us to stand for what's right for us, you know. And then having that light in the darkness is, yeah, I mean, the dark side of our regrets, our shame, our fears, but that little light bulb, you know, or if like the in the cartoons, like the light at the end of the tunnel, where it starts off with this little pinprick. You know, but what it does is it gives hope. You know, and that's what I want to do. I want to form that relationship where it coalesces into like one thing, almost wrapped around itself, you know, to become whole again, instead of separate, where this is where I keep all my secrets, and then this is where I pretend to be a version. Because that version, that's just me trying to show you what you want to see. And how the fuck do you do that for, I mean, for every single person that we know?
Yeah, you reminded me of the quote. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's something like compassion is a relationship not between like the unhealed and the healed, but between equals, right? Like this idea that that darkness is what allows us to connect to other people. It's what helps us understand the human experience, and the integration of it is important to our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the other really cool thing is in the very beginning, you said something about how we cut 50% of our knowledge off, right? We're only receiving information through our brain, not through all of our senses. And I was thinking about just how much nature and the natural world has to communicate to us that we're missing. Because, and so I'm curious if the types of information that I get and experiences I have when I become more present, like right now, I think that being smart comes from my brain, but maybe being smart comes from the birds and the trees and the stars and right things that I don't understand yet. How, like you said, how to communicate with them. But it makes sense to me that there would be a whole nother realm of communication that I'm missing because of my senses. Right? My senses are closed down right now.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, part of escaping the, like the, when people talk about escaping the matrix, you know, they normally talk about the way we're living our lives, you know, and there's definitely something to be said. Cause I mean, all of this just sort of intertwines within himself, you know, like Rockefeller's taking over the public school system, you know, cause they, like, with his belief, we need a nation of workers, not a nation of thinkers, you know? And then now learning with neuroscience, the effects of habitual life, you know, where you get up, habits are great. Having a morning routine stuff, great. But having this habitual life where day in, day out, our brains, we're not operating from the prefrontal cortex. We're operating from earlier versions of the brain, and it's releasing cheaper forms of proteins, the proteins that we see in aging, you know? So start to have more issues, you know, IBS, like all of this stuff. So there's that side of it. And what the hell were we talking about? I knew this was going to happen.
I think we were talking about like more forms of communication and like, and when you're in tune with your five senses.
Yeah. I forgot what that all had to do with everything too. But well, what it made me think of was, you remember like when 5G came out and there was like a lot of fear around like it caused cancer and stuff. But you know, one of the videos that I shared was David Attenborough showing this thing with plants, how plants issue a vibration, and he had like this little machine that he hooked up so that you can hear the vibration of the plant. You can hear the tone of the vibration, and how bees can hear that tone and know if the plant has pollen, you know? So if a bee lands on it, pollinates it, and then leaves, the tone changes. So another bee comes by, hears that tone, and is like, ah, damn it, someone already got here. So off to the next. So, you know, just like that fear of like, what is all this Wi-Fi technology going to be doing to us, you know? In the same way, the trees, the plants, the grass, the bees, everything is giving off these vibrations.
Yes.
You know, and some are more pure.
Yeah. And some things are just very scientific. I heard the other day, and I thought this was so cool, that bird song decreases anxiety, right? So when you're outside and you hear the birds chirping and stuff, you feel better. It regulates your nervous system. And the reason why is because to your animal brain, birds chirping means there's not a predator around. Of course, right? Like you hear that and you're like, oh, of course, right? But you think about that. So like there's this huge range of communication that we're missing by living isolated and letting this darkness or this fear isolate us from more than our mind, all the rest of us.
Yeah. Imagine becoming so in tune. I think of Steve Irwin with those snakes, you know, like some of the most venomous snakes in the world, and he would pick them up and they would strike at him and strike at him and strike at him, but eventually he could read how they were communicating. And he would put his face down next to him and stuff. And it was such an amazing thing, but he can see, he can read that communication. And the problem is we don't know how to communicate with ourselves.
Yes.
You know, we talk about the mind-body connection, you know, but as great as some people's like mind-body connection is, like we're not communicating properly.
Yeah.
Like, how amazing would it be? I mean, how different was your experience in the garden when you were in your head and then when you were in your senses?
It was shocking to me that I hadn't noticed that I was working with hops, and there's like a very specific musty hop smell, and there was a little bit of stickiness on the leaves. There were so many things that I was missing.
Yeah.
It was amazing that the air was cold because it's getting cold out now, and my ears were just starting to hurt along the edges, but kind of hurt in a good way when your ears get too cold, right? There was all these sensations and smells and things happening. It blew my mind.
Yeah, and dude, I'm so glad you were explaining it like that, because it reminded me of what I meant to say. So you have the whole that side of it, you know, society trying to disconnect us from that. And then you have on the other side, in Romans, it talks of like something about like the people that have never heard about Jesus, because you know, in Christianity, there's always that question, you know, what about those like the lost tribes that have never heard of Jesus? Do they go to hell? You know, and they always go to this verse in Romans, that even the ones that haven't heard can see the stars, can see the creation, and know there's a God. So when you said, does that, is what making me smarter, you know, like creation connects us to the creator.
Yes.
Whether you're an atheist or you're a Christian or whatever it is, creation connects you to the creator.
Yes.
And
Whether that's the universe or God or creative force or whatever word you use for that, that's it.
I mean, spending, when I go into the woods, just the amount of green, I don't know if there's something with that, but I would not be surprised. I'm gonna like chat GPT it like right after and just, you know, does seeing a lot of green, natural green, like from the trees and stuff, does it do something? You
Yeah, I
know,
bet it does.
I yeah it's gotta be something. I'm gonna find it out. We'll put it like in the show notes and stuff, but. And I think it's the same thing. Like, is you always say, like, how we respond, like what we put out is a mirror of what we feel. You know, we can look at nature and it can be a mirror of our internal processes that go on, you know, because there is a time of darkness in nature. But there's, again, we equate darkness with death, you know, you know, things like that. And but I mean, the forest comes alive at night.
Yeah.
Life operates in the darkness. It sees better. It feeds. It survives in the darkness. That's
Yeah.
not bad.
Yes. Yeah, you know what's funny? When we first started doing long backpacking trips and we'd be out in the middle of nowhere at night, if I'd have to get up and pee, I realized how afraid of the dark I was.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I had gone pee the afternoon from the campsite. It was no problem. But to get up in the middle of the night with no lights anywhere and complete darkness and walk out, what's going to happen to me? Nothing. But it felt like a lion was going to come and grab me in his jaws. I was afraid of the dark. And really realizing that was shocking to me. Because if you would have asked me before, I would have said, oh, I'm not afraid of the dark. I'm an adult.
Yeah.
Turns out I was.
Yeah, as soon as one of our senses is like muted, shit gets scary. You know, but in the same way, like, you know, you go to those like float tank things And people talk about like having hallucinations and stuff. So when you know you're safe and you shut off all your senses, I'm good. But when we're in that unknown, you know, and it's I think it's that is the thing in life, especially with trauma. And the thing about life is everybody has it, you know, to a certain level. And like Viktor Frankl said, you know, it has the nature of gas. If you put gas in whatever size container you put it in, it's eventually going to fill that entire container. It's the nature of it. And same as the nature of trauma. You know, when we get into these trauma competitions of, well, I've been through this, so you should just suck this up. But if that's all they've been through, that equals out to 100% for them. You know, so they could be just as fucked up as the next person. You know, everybody has the right to be as fucked up as they are, you know, without somebody judging them for, oh, like, you shouldn't be like that, suck it up, you know, whatever. But it's like, ah, dude, I did it again, man. And see, this is like how unused to being present I am. Because when I start following that again, like, I don't know what the hell I just said, but like, I knew it was just present.
And it feels good to be in that space too, even if it means you lose a thought.
Yeah, dude, I call it, so when I smoke and make some videos, I call it chasing the rabbit. You know, just start talking and see where I end up. And I started really liking doing it because it was almost like a form of meditation. You know? I mean, just start talking and see where it goes and become present with what you're saying.
I wanted to, before I forget, go back to something that you said in the beginning, and then something I thought of just now when you were talking. In the beginning, you talked about it's not a path, it's a garden. And I thought that's so profound because a path is I'm getting somewhere,
Yeah.
right? I'm going to arrive here. It's very destination. A garden is very meandering, looking at shit. Nowhere to go. Very different ideas. And then, right after I was explaining my garden experience and you started talking, whatever you said made me realize when I go out into my day, like when I wake up in this human form, my greatest desire is not to feel. I'm not like, oh, what am I going to feel today? Am I going to feel the sun? Am I going to feel this? Like I'm meandering a garden. My greatest desire in any given day is to get shit done, to do stuff that makes me good enough and lovable enough to be here on this earth, to prove myself in some way, right? I have all these other human agendas. So, of course, I'm not experiencing more of the juicy life. It's not even my biggest desire,
But that
really.
is fucking genius, man.
Right? I've been
Oh my
telling
God,
myself
yeah.
it's a big desire, but it's fucking not when I look at how I'm actually acting.
Yeah. Wow. Like say, like that is gonna be one of the things that I take that I know is gonna have a very big impact in on me. Setting that thought every day, every time I think, what do I have to do? Say, fuck that. What do I want to experience?
Yes. And feel and smell and see. And if that was my biggest desire to just, ooh, get like the whole world is gooey and I just massage it every day and I get my hands in goo and I'm playing, like that's how I see it. That would be a completely different life. There would be a lot less pressure.
And and within that, there's things that we have to do,
Of course.
you know. But there's this girl that I follow on TikTok that she, I mean, she's just such a joy to watch her live. And she started a like a series on doing something new every day after work just because it makes me feel good. And then she would just film herself doing it, eating a peanut butter jelly sandwich at the beach, showing herself making it and everything. She just went through like a breakup, and she shared all the darkness, all the hurt. But then she went back into doing things, something new after work. She went back into that because she knows how much it affected her. And you watch her like come out of this. So she was going to school, she was working, she was dealing with a broken heart. And she still found that way to live through, what do I want to experience?
Yes.
Going to the beach, flying a kite. I mean, she literally just does so much different stuff.
Yeah. And I think there can be subtle forms of that. Like, I have to call AT&T today to dispute my bill, which is something I hate to do because they never take the money off and they always have some lame excuse about why, right? On hold and all this stuff. So, what if I went into that experience going, not resisting it, which I feel now tension in my body, but how can I make this the most enjoyable or juicy experience for me? Okay, like whatever I like of outcomes. When the person gets on the phone, I'm like, hey, how's it going today? How can I show up differently so that, it's kind of that thing when I love someone, I'm experiencing love. Right? Who gives a shit about them, right? They are or aren't, whatever, that's their story. So when I make this phone call, what do I experience? Is what I choose. And that's a challenge, right? What if I could make the phone call and never feel, I've been wronged, you're annoying me. All those things I'm doing to myself. Well, that's an interesting, playful way to live.
And that's it's so beautiful too, because I think that's another thing with practicing awareness and how that falls into so many different aspects of our lives, being aware of the meaning that we're giving to things. Because when we go in meaningless, then we're going to react to what that other person's doing. We're going to take it personal. Like we had a leak in our oil tank, or not oil tank, in our furnace the other day. And we had heat, we had everything. There was just something going on. Like the overflow thing was leaking. So I called him up, and the girl I talked to, you could tell she was overwhelmed. And she wasn't snappy or anything, but you could tell like she was like at her breaking point. So I was like, listen, we have heat. This has been going on for a little bit, so the furnace is still working fine. I said, we're low priority. Her complete demeanor completely or her demeanor completely changed. And then she was like, no, you're a very high priority. Like, everybody's a high priority. I'm like, yeah, I get it, but just I'm not an emergency call. Don't worry about it, And then the next day they came out and they took care of it. So it was like, I mean, it worked perfectly, but I was in control of that situation. Like 5 years ago, I would have been like, do your fucking job. You don't have the right to feel overwhelmed. This is your job. You're getting paid to do this. Shut the fuck up.
With and you wouldn't have even thought there was any other way. Like
Oh, of
that was
course
just
not.
a normal response, right? Because like we were talking about in the beginning, your awareness hadn't reached that level to even question that.
Yeah, and that it happened to me the other day. So I like Sandy goes to bed. She's up at like 4 a.m. But like you off your thing, dude. When you did that video, your clock started going off.
No, I said four. I
Yeah, I was like, oh, let's see if there's gonna be seven dings going on here. Like I'm
was
up at four, and it
so
keeps going. But yeah, there was four dings.
funny.
That was awesome. But just from the anxiety I'm having over this trip and everything, and really kind of honing in, I just think this is the time for me to face this stuff because I'm being confronted with it everywhere. And it's funny to see my mind going into old patterns, you know. So she goes to bed early. I usually stay up for another couple of hours. And she had forgotten something. So, which meant I would have to run out at like 8:30, you know. But I had things I wanted to do. And that used to be like one of my huge triggers. Like if I had a plan, if anything came up, it would throw me like completely off. And especially how stupid, how dare you forget something, you know? And then it turned out like to be like, I mean, absolutely meaningless, but I was able to recognize that pattern. So before I even have a chance to see that, like what I'm doing, I'm already reacting. I'm already moving because it's coming from the survival response. And the survival response, that's that knee-jerk reaction that we have, like a big noise or something like that, you know? Because I mean, we need to move without thinking because it's about life or death, you know? But Sandy forgetting something is not a life and death situation. It's literally a meaningless situation that I got to go out. It was a nice night, you know. I did a little couple of other things along with it, and then I came home and smoked and went to bed.
This is actually really beautiful because, we've been talking about where we would like to be, but now we're talking about how far we've come, right? And so it's really beautiful to see, like, it is possible because 5 years ago, if I would have told you we were going to have this conversation and you were going to say the things you said, you would have been like, hell no, that's never going to
Yep.
happen. So in 5 years, you're going to be doing something that the you right now is saying, hell no, I could never be that man. I could never be that person.
Dude, that's another one too. Like where I said, like I feel that board, like that hit right there. You know, because that is so fucking true.
You've already done it, right? It's just.
Yeah, and that's that light that I need to connect with in the darkness, because all I'm focused on is the darkness, you know, where or the lack of being able to communicate with it, the lack of being able to deal with it instead of hide from it, you know. That's what keeps it, the doubt there, you know. If I was able to, like, just from that picture that the AI, the DALL-E, you know, drew, acid drew, like just something that represents the things that we should talk about that we don't talk about. And it drew this picture of like this stone closet looking thing, just this cell sitting in an open room, with this big wooden door shackled, with that big wooden thick cross that comes down in it. But then these like smoke creatures were coming out of it. And I was like, holy shit, like, yes. You know, the problem isn't the darkness. The problem is hiding from it. That's what keeps us fucked up.
Another fun little exercise I did this week was asked myself, what is the worst thing that somebody could say about me? Like, if I imagine two people I know talking about me behind my back, what are the worst things, right? She's flaky, she's unorganized, flaky. Oh my gosh, that's a huge trigger for me. So, okay, there's a place I need to go gaze into, right? Get to know a little better. But I came up with a list of things that I felt a trigger to if someone said them about me. And that let me know some parameters of my darkness.
Yeah.
Because, like
That's
you,
it.
the way I think about it is like, when you accidentally drop something into a different object of almost exactly the same size and you can't get your fingers on the edges to like pull it out? That's how I feel with my darkness right now. It's like I feel the edges, but I can't get under it, right? And like really deal with it. So I'm hoping that this is like helping me, okay, let's identify more of the edges of this. All right, I would never want to be called jealous. I would never want to be called stuck up. I would never want to be called this. So in what ways am I that? In what ways am I a jealous person? In what ways am I stuck up? Because obviously I wouldn't be ashamed about it if I wasn't hiding some level of that from myself.
What meaning do you put to being stuck up? Like, what if you had to describe a person that was stuck up, how would you describe it?
I think what bothers me about it is this idea of like, well, she thinks she's better than she actually is. And that would break my heart if someone felt that way about me, that my level of self-awareness was so far removed from who I really was. Right. So I thought I was a good person who went out there and did this and that, but really I'm a shitty person who does, and I'm a narcissist and I'm self, right? Like that. If someone recognized something that was misaligned in me, that just, I mean, I just feel triggers all over when I think about that happening. So that tells me that I'm not aligned some places, because what the fuck am I hiding? Otherwise, I wouldn't feel that way.
You know, and it's funny too. It just made me think of, like, we live in this third dimension. You know, there's other dimensions and stuff, but most times when we think about ourselves as two dimensional. You know, so in both of those meanings of what being stuck up would be, like that, the self awareness or a piece of shit. It's either one,
yes,
or the other. It's perfection or it's utter failure. You know, and then it's also about what they think, what they think of me. And it's funny, like, we're like, but I mean, we have those different dimensions, like in all aspects of us. You know, what's that thing where it started, like, I don't know. I just seen drawings of it, like that some like AI does, like where it just starts going in circles and it makes like the flower of life or something like that, or I don't know what it's called, but like how it just starts on this one little thing. And then all of a sudden there's this beautiful, I don't even know what you call those things, but this beautiful like drawing, it's just all these different dimensions begin to come out of this one little singular drawing. And that's what we are. So I know to some people, I am the biggest piece of shit. I know to other people, I'm the greatest person. You know, to other people, I'm an annoyance. You know, to other people, I'm an acquaintance. You know, just somebody they know, whatever. Somebody like that they see on the street with my dog, you know, smoking weed, dude. You know what I mean? Like, But we take those and we apply those to ourselves because we have this fear. It's almost like that Velcro. Like we have this fear that because we judge others of that thing, like, oh my God, I can't be that. But I just figure like I can almost guarantee anybody that somebody out there thinks that exact thing of you.
Right. What's important is your inner response to it.
Yes.
Right. Like if you said to me like, Mindy has a face that looks like an elephant or something crazy, I'd be like, whatever, right? Or if you said Mindy's a bad wife, I'd be like, whatever. Cause I know that I'm a good wife. Like that is a role that just is delicious and easy for me. But if someone said I was dishonest, I was a liar, whoa, I feel that one. So that, it's not about the other person at all, right? Thank God we have all these other people reflecting us back to us so that we can go, ooh, that one hurt. That's where I need to do some work.
Yeah, and that was Like one of the things that when we had Jared on 2 weeks ago, like he said, our triggers can be our teachers. And that stuck with me out of all, like out of everything we talked about, that stuck with me the most. And I've been trying to, be aware of that, like when I can, when I start getting triggered, just asking it why.
Yeah.
What is the lesson here? What are you teaching me? And just that one little change, it's going to produce the same emotion. It's going to produce the anxiety. It's going to produce the anger. You're going to feel that. That emotion isn't the problem. The problem is the meaning.
Yeah.
What meaning am I giving this specific trigger? Like if somebody said, like you're just a bum. You like sit around talking into your camera, like wanting to be an influencer, whatever, something like that. Like that would trigger me because I'd say that to myself on a daily basis, but somebody else better not dare say that to me. That's mine to say to myself. Like nobody else can say it, but what is that trying to teach me? Like, what's the flip side of that coin? So I know
Yeah.
the negative side of it, but what's the other side of it?
Right. I think that if you go into it, it's going to show you where all the reasons why you don't believe that yourself. Right.
Yeah, and that's like such a like a perfect point, like because it'll keep me checking. It'll keep me like on my toes so that the praise is not gonna like get to my head and be like, look what I've done, and I'm not gonna start blowing up my values
Yes.
for bullshit, whatever, accolades, possessions. Nothing. Like if those come, they come because like I don't even know if this makes sense, but because I was pure enough to my values,
Yes.
not because I sought them.
Yeah. But I think, how do I say this? Okay, I'm going to give you my opinion here, so I'll take it with 100 grains of salt. I think learning to be okay with being arrogant, or like there's an element of something happening there. Like you don't want to go against your values, of course, right? But I guess I'll talk about myself. So I mentioned the lying one. When I looked at that this week a little deeper, and I looked at all the times I've lied to someone I love, because I am a liar, right? Every human is. When I started to look at it deeper, I realized the reasons why I lied and what was going on for me and how it, and I grew compassion, right? So that there wasn't, I didn't have to be so defensive ab against being a liar. So I'm curious if there is an investigation for you about times when you didn't align with your values, or you were arrogant in a belief that turned people off because you weren't accepting, right? Like, there are things that you, I'm guessing, have done, and being from the Christian background where there's so much arrogance in the church, right? There might be some conversation with your past self or forgiving of your past self. Just like I had to go back and forgive Mindy. I mean, this is a big one, for having an affair in my first marriage. I would never do that now. Like, the thought of that breaks my heart, not only because of my husband, but to live that dishonestly. And so I had to go back for that, because there was still shame there that was keeping me defensive today against somebody calling me a liar, right?
Yeah, I have the ones where I look back and I'm just like, oh, that was embarrassing. Like I think I was like 8 and I was witnessing to a friend of mine. And then when we got to the part where like, all right, say this prayer, and I was like, ask Jesus to come in your heart. And he started laughing. And so I punched him as hard as I could in the stomach. And
That is the perfect, perfect story about what we are talking about. Oh my gosh, that's like a little capsule of that sort of heirloom value thing that you brought up. That is great. So is there an 8-year-old Keith in there that you need to go, hey, buddy, you're doing your best with what you had at the moment. Like, you're all right, right? Some sort of...
Yeah, that one's easy for me, you know. And then because that one I find more humorous, and so it's like, all right, I was 8 years old, I didn't know what the hell I was doing, you know. And me and the kid like remained friends afterwards. Like, we weren't friends for like a week, but then everything was cool. But there was some when I got home from the military with my girls. That when I think of now, the thought will almost override my mind, where I can't stop thinking about it. Yes. And I played with that a couple weeks ago that was happening, and I was doing everything, you know. I was like, all right, I'm gonna go smoke. I'm gonna go watch a documentary. I'm gonna go do all the things that you know. I'm gonna refocus. Like we always talk about, like I'm gonna actively take control of my thoughts and refocus. And my brain was like, "Fuck you, dude. No, you're not." You know, and I couldn't. And I remembered. I thought, "Fuck it. If my brain wants to think about this, if my brain wants to think about my daughter, then let's think about my daughter."
Yeah.
And that I could just twitch. So I started thinking about her at the same age, but with the fun that we had, you know, and the funny things that we did, and then just started like moving up from there through time into the person that she is today, and the things that she still does that make me just laugh, you know, so hard. And it satisfied my brain for some reason, because it was like, okay, we're thinking about her. But it was, you know, it's that, whatever you want to call it, yin yang, light, dark, the other side of the coin, whatever you want to call it. I since I was on that anyways, I decided to explore the whole of it and not just take half of it as truth. And that doesn't take away the feeling. Like, even now thinking about it, I don't feel good.
Yeah.
But it freed me from the hold it had on it.
Yeah.
And it also let me know that I, again, because I've talked to her about it, and she's forgiven me. In fact, she was like, I don't even remember it. You know? And I'm like, this fucking haunts me. And it was just me just losing my temper, but it was like a particularly bad one. There was like no abuse besides me just screaming, you know, or anything like that. I want to like make it sound, you know, bigger than it is by not giving any details. I don't like talking about the details just because of how it makes me feel.
Yeah.
You know, but it also lets me know that I again have to like forgive myself for that.
Yeah. I read something the other day that said that when we have those kind of ruminating, obsessive thoughts, that it's a sign that we haven't grieved enough for whatever we're thinking about. And that just rang so true for me, that the grief for self peace, right? That as much as conscious Keith now wishes he would have been more conscious then, he wasn't, and that's okay, right? And I have all my own things like that, right? Conscious Mindy wasn't available in her first marriage. Yeah. And way too much healing to do, and so I caused other people pain, and that was shitty.
Yeah.
And going through the grieving process and accepting those things, I think that's that dark work. Is looking at it and going, yeah, I was that person. I was the kind of wife that hid having sex with another man every day to your face, right? That does not make me proud.
Yeah.
But the more I have compassion for who I was at that time in my life, the better person I come today. Like it doesn't make any sense to me, right? By accepting why I'm accepting I'm so shitty back then makes me better now. That seems counterintuitive to me.
Yeah. You know, and it almost like kind of walks the line of that toxic positivity.
Yes.
You know, because it's not look for the silver lining, but look at the whole of the thing and not just the fucking half. You know,
Yes.
so yes, it was shitty. And thinking about it makes you feel like shit. Just like me thinking about my anger, all the shit that I did makes me feel like shit. But the other side of that is if we didn't walk through that shit, if we didn't do that, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be us right now.
Yep. And I am very grateful for that. I
Hell
mean,
yeah.
I see that side of it too, right? Like you said, there's both sides to that. Yeah, it's interesting. I'll be interested as we go out into these next 2 weeks, what comes up for me that I don't want to look at, right? Where the really dark places are.
Yeah. And you know what I found too is that the ones that I keep the most secret that have the biggest hold over me, I know are the ones I give the most power to are the weakest ones that I have.
Yeah.
You know, like this trip, I almost didn't go on it for one specific reason. And this still scares me to death. I don't know what I'm gonna eat. I am such a picky eater. I don't like vegetables. In fact, I make these green juices that are just full like kale and spinach and like and then put like blueberries and Granny Smith apples in it so I can stomach it. I mean, I've gotten so used to them now, they're good, but like I have to drink my freaking vegetables. Like that's how like I just can't do it, dude. And I'm terrified. I'm like I'm gonna need like when we get to the airport, dude, like when we land, like I need to like hit a store and just buy like every bag of Doritos that they have or something, because I'm just gonna live on that. You know, because they're talking about having traditional meals, and I'm like, what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, it did help me that finding out last time that George Harrison had the same issue and carried beans around. So, but I hate beans, so I can't even carry fucking beans. So, like, yeah, but that holds a lot of power over me.
Yeah.
There's things I won't do.
Yeah.
You know, another one that is so small but still holds so much power is I cough a lot when I smoke out of anything but a bowl. You know, like I can't do a bong because I'll end up throwing up. Like if I do a joint, I gotta take little baby poly, you know, and that's it. Because if I take anything more than that, I'm out for 10 minutes coughing my lungs out. And there's like cannabis groups around the state. They get together, they go on hikes, they do beach cleanups, they do like all of this stuff, they do educational stuff. And I'm like, oh, that'd be so cool to get into, especially with the business, you know, like networking, whatever. I won't go though, because like when I'm gonna be the dude on the hike that's packing a bowl, you know, trying to smoke, like everybody brings joints.
Yeah.
And I don't want to cough like that in front of these like people.
Right.
And it's like you're letting that stop you from experiencing the garden of your life.
Yeah, right. Because wherever that thought is seated in your mind is seated in something deeper, right?
Yeah.
About what that means about you, or that's the interesting stuff, right? When you go digging and you're like, oh, that's on the inside.
Yeah, but then there's some. Those are the ones that are like, you know, the hand coming out, like the elongated fingers from under the bed. You know, like those are the ones that are, those are the ones that I want to get to know, like on this trip, and I want to incorporate into my life.
Yeah. That was a really good, fun show. I really liked it.
It went a lot different than I thought.
Yeah, me too.
I thought I was going to be very, very angry. And I did everything to put myself in a mood to get angry, because
yeah,
I thought that's what I'd have to do. But I ended up really enjoying this. I feel a lot of anxiety right now because like this was so vulnerable, but it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And it kind of makes me think about just how my MO is to like theoretically like go smashing in the doors with a bat, right? Ah, come here, darkness, right? And really again and again how much I've shown, no, it's love, it's compassion. Like these are the tools of this work. And you know, I've lived a lot of life using the tools of my mind, judgment, self-beat up. And so using compassion and love, and I'm just always amazed they work, because my mind is like, yeah, those are sissy tools. Don't use those ones.
Dude, I was at physical therapy, and I don't know if it was because, like, my physical therapist, I'm pretty sure she was a CIA interrogator before she got into physical therapy. Like, I've given her my bank account information like so many times over, because she is just freaking horrible and she loves making me suffer. But in the suffering, I had this thought that popped into my head, like, what if everything, like literally everything, was love?
Yeah.
You know, authenticity, I think, is just the ultimate form of self-love.
Mm-hmm.
Right. When we hate somebody, going the opposite direction, when we hate somebody, it's many times because they've done something, they've hurt something, someone, something that we had a tremendous amount of love for. You know, wanting revenge. I mean, all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what if everything was just love? I mean, even so many times depression can be a way to connect with yourself, caring for yourself, feeling, you know, connected to that pain. It's a form of loving yourself. It's sucks more out of you than it puts into you. You know, there's much better, many better ways to do it, but like, I don't know. Like, I have no idea if that's stupid, right, wrong,
yeah,
somewhere in the middle. But you know, just thinking, like, when they zoom out on those shows, like from the earth into the universe, the galaxy, the universe and stuff, and they get to this point where it's this huge ball, you know. And I even heard like the multiple universe there is like described as like bubbles in a bubble bath, like all these separate round spheres just all over the place, you know. And what if that it was just this love, was just this sphere? That's the basic one emotion that we have, and it's just all these separate little sections of it.
Yes. I think that might be true. Yeah.
Even some of the worst things that have been done in the form of some type of love. Love of self, love of greed, you know, being greedy, like, yeah. Love of that, love of self, but a toxic love.
Yes. Yeah, that's interesting to think about. I did think about using love as a tool to help my ADHD messy nature, you know how I've been talking about, that's a real struggle for me. And when I am, you know, putting tinfoil over something instead of putting it in a Tupperware and rushing through this and rushing through that, you know, saving to my desktop instead of saving to the folder that matters, I'm giving no love to those leftovers, to that file. What if I used love as a tool that was like, okay, leftovers, I'm going to put you in the best fitting container. Like, oh, you're going to have so much fun in the fridge. Okay, file, I'm going to put you with all the other files like you. Like, what if everything in my life I was loving as if it was not just a thing? Because like we said before, it's about me. If I'm loving the leftovers, I'm vibrating love.
Yes. Yes.
Right. So the object, it doesn't matter if it's a person, if it's a rock, if it's leftovers, if it's, how can I look at everything through that lens of love? And I think that might actually help me get more organized.
Yeah.
Because that feels like something I know how to do. Like I know how to love a person. So if I transferred that to objects, I'm going to give it a try.
Yeah. That, dude, I like that. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like loving the experience of what you're doing.
No going matter
to what like, is. Yeah, that idea that life is a garden.
Yes.
It's spending time with that flower, whatever, that bush, whatever. I don't go to a lot of gardens. I don't know what the hell is in them. But like spending time, whatever's in a garden, like is spending time with that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, beautiful. All right. Anything else to add before we close up?
It was fun. I enjoyed that, man.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thank you so much for joining us. We are so grateful for all of our listeners. Please support us in doing what we love. It's as simple as hitting that like or subscribe button. It would really mean a lot to us. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you next week.